Macabrepedia deals with dark subject matter that may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Funerals are expensive and take time to plan. For many, the need for a funeral comes unexpectedly. For the Torojan people of Indonesia, getting a funeral just right is a lifelong endeavor, and sometimes even beyond. When one of their number dies, they may not do so at a time where the proper offerings and festivities can be provided, so the family treats them as though they hadn't died at all. That they instead are just kind of asleep. They dress them, they offer them food and drink, talk to them, and visit them in their bedrooms. Funeral is no small affair. Not providing the proper send-off to a relative is a terrible disrespect. Some funerals do not take place for years after the death of the person, and during that time, they continue to live with those who loved them most in life. Saying goodbye is difficult. Some want to make the end just right, just perfect, not sparing any expense, and some just can't ever let go. Join us as we add another entry into this, our Macabrepedia.
Hello, and welcome to Macabrepedia, a marriage of true crime and the truly bizarre. We're your hosts, Marissa and Matthew. And Matthew, what are we talking about today?
Today, we are exploring the bizarre...
Macabre?
It's a story of Carl Tanzler, or possibly Count Carl von Kossel, nice. As he had a few aliases, George Carl Tanzler, Count Carl Tanzler von Kossel. But for this entry, we will be using Carl Tanzler.
Why can't we use the Count?
I mean, we can call him the Count if you prefer, but...
Carl's fine.
Well, I'm going to call him Tanzler. Tanzler was born in Dresden, Germany on February 8th, 1877. The earliest years of his life are not well documented, but it is reported that he traveled from Germany to India and then to Australia, where he bought property and took on a love for engineering. In the 19-teens, while in Australia, he began work on building a transcontinental flyer. With the seeming aspirations of using it, which transcontinental flight at this time was a huge feat. But before he got very far into it, the Great War, World War I, started, and it wasn't a good time to be a German in British-held territories. Tanzler and others were held by authorities in a prison camp during the war. Apparently, there are accounts of him trying to build a boat to escape from the island prison where he was being held. The man is handy and crafty and creative and driven, for sure.
Usually good qualities.
Yeah.
Not always, but usually.
Well, it's a story. Eventually, he was released to Holland for like this prisoner exchange kind of thing. And from there, went back to Germany and to his mother, where he stayed for an additional 3 years before under her... advice, heading to the U.S. where his sister had already emigrated to. While in Germany, he does marry and he has two children, one of which is Clarista, and she eventually dies from diphtheria at the age of 10, which is a bacterial infection that causes a number of issues, one of which is a terrible cough and some breathing problems and swelling. Kind of comes into play a little bit later.
Gotcha.
In 1926, Tanzler and his wife and his children settle in Florida near Tanzler's sister. In 1927, Tanzler takes a job as a radiologist in Key West, Florida at the U.S. Marine Hospital under the name Carl von Kossel. Not Count, just Carl von Kossel.
I like German names.
The von?
Yeah, I like the von part.
I mean, Carl Kossel, I mean, it's just the von that makes it German. Key West.
Yeah, but it's a cool von.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it flows well. Key West is hours away from where his family was. And I believe that he left his family and was living alone in Key West at this point. I don't know exactly the details as to what happened there, but I believe that his wife and children stay. It's called Zephyr Hills, Florida. At this time, I believe is both of his kids are still alive at this time too. But now Tanzler seems to have had a number of adventures by this point. This is 1927, 1928. So he's been in a internment camp in Australia. He's been all over the world, to from Germany to India to Australia to Holland, now the US. But and you know, he's notably eccentric in his hobbies and aspirations. He has been traveling across the world. He started building a transcontinental airplane and was put into that internment camp to try to build a boat to escape. I mean, the guy has aspirations. But one of the most influential moments in his life came from his childhood. While visiting Italy, young Count George von Karl von Kossel-Tanzler, or whatever we're using for his name at this point, was visited by the spirit of his ancestor, Countess Anne Constantia von Kossel, who revealed to him the face of his one true love, the woman he was destined to love beyond all others. She was an exotic, dark-haired woman from a far-off land.
Aren't they always?
No, I don't know. He's already, I mean, what's far from, I mean, she's dark-haired. I don't know. He's in Italy at this point. I don't know. But,
I mean, it sounds like he's been all around the world. So where's this far off?
That's what I'm saying. Like, how far off is this? But this is a childhood vision. Maybe that's part of why he decides to travel all over the place.
Perhaps.
But we're going to fast forward back up to 1930, April 22nd, actually. The 53-year-old Karl Tanzler is working in the U.S. Marine Hospital in Key West, Florida, where he meets the 20-year-old Elena Milagro de Hoyos, or Helen. Helen, or Elena, was a young, beautiful, dark-haired Cuban-American girl. And Tanzler, through meeting her in the flesh for the first time, realized he had known her from his visions given to him by his ancestor so many years ago. Now, Elena had been brought to the hospital by her mother on the account of a persistent cough. She was living with her parents after having a recent miscarriage and separation from her husband, Louis Mesa. Elena continued to visit the hospital, and Tanzler continued to get closer to her, both her and her parents. Tanzler gained their trust, and when Elena was diagnosed with tuberculosis, he stepped in and offered to help. Tuberculosis at this time in the 1930s was a very fatal disease still.
Yeah.
The doctors didn't have a lot of answers for the family. But Tanzler, not a doctor, a radiologist, aka the guy who runs the x-rays machine, said that he wanted to do some treatments on her, that he wanted to help in any way he could, and he had some ideas.
Did he have some antibiotics?
I don't know exactly. I imagine that he hit her with a few x-rays, hoping to burn it out or something. But the Hoyos, obviously, they wanted to give their daughter every chance that they could to help her recover. So, of course, the family accepted his offer to help. Tanzler procured medical equipment, including the x-ray machine, electronic devices, various medicines, and brought this to the residence and set it up, and was at the house pretty constantly throughout the time, giving his treatments to Elena. Also, I imagine he has a German accent, which, you know, if somebody in a lab coat and a German accent comes and tells you that he has some treatments for you, and if you see a picture of Tanzler, he looks the part of the mad scientist.
This is in the 30s, though, right? 20s mm-hmm. or 30s? So yeah. This is before all of that, profiling of World War II.
Yeah, yeah. This
German
is still, this, yeah, this isn't
concentration
like,
camp doc.
Yeah, but he doesn't come across as like the, you know, like the crazy Nazi doctor,
I'm
but
just
he still
saying.
He still has an accent that gives authority, like this most
is,
accents
this
do.
This is pre that, you know, profiling German doctors, I guess.
I was just talking that he probably had a trustworthy accent because he sound, you know. Anyways, so Tanzler acted as her specialist, but he would also bring her gifts like jewelry, clothing, little trinkets, just things to show that he cared. And Tanzler spent many hours with Elena, comforting her and doing what he believed was the best effort to save her. But no matter what he tried, it didn't work. And on October 25th, 1931, Elena Milagro de Hoyos, I'm probably destroying her name,
that's
by the way.
That's a beautiful name, though. Elena is just...
Yeah, Elena's really good. I was calling her Helen, then I switched it to Elena. But Elena, on October 25th, 1931, she died from complications due to tuberculosis. Mm-hmm. The family was obviously devastated. Now, I know what you're thinking, but But his ancestor gave him a vision that he was destined to love her, and you didn't provide any evidence that they were in love. Where is the love story? I know, I hear you. Well, no evidence shows that they had any romantic connection, or that Elena ever responded to his gifts with any level of affection. But don't let that fool you. We will get into the love story after we see what we can dig up from our sponsors.
Oh, no.
This week's sponsor is the memory of lost loved ones. Losing loved ones is the most emotionally painful thing a person can go through in life. Regardless of your beliefs, it is never very easy to deal with loss. So we thank all those lost loved ones whose presence helped make us who we are now and who we will be in the future. You are physically gone, but your memories live on in those that remain. Of course, also check out the show notes where you can find links to our affiliates, one of which is our podcast host Buzzsprout. If you use that link and sign up for a paid plan, it helps out Macabrepedia as well as gets you a $20 Amazon gift card. Buzzsprout is a great hosting platform with tons of time-saving and easy-to-use features that can help you tighten up the sound, learn how to reach your audience, and provides you with easy ways to get sponsors, like, you know, real sponsors, not like the one I just gave you there, but the kind that make you money, you know? So if you're thinking about starting a podcast, check out Buzzsprout and use the affiliate link. And now, back to our macabre story. After Elena's death, Tansler was distraught and paid for the funeral.
Well, at least one good thing came from it.
And also, with the permission of the family, he had an above-ground mausoleum built in the Key West Cemetery.
Wow.
The mausoleum had a locked door that only Tansler had a key to.
Oh, no.
He could be found there in the mausoleum almost every evening. He would be singing Elena's favorite Spanish songs and talking to her as if she was still alive.
That's sweet, but maybe her parents should have a key.
Well, you know, why don't you just leave a mausoleum locked, you know?
Oh, yes.
He's not in Indonesia. This is Key West, Florida. I mean, you know, Florida listeners, I mean, you're known as weird. But, yeah, I don't know.
I love you.
But
it's weird.
Yeah, sitting in a mausoleum singing songs it's touching. It's sweet. It is what it is. Well, that is until one night in April 1933, when Tansler went into that mausoleum with a toy wagon.
Okay, I knew something was coming, but I wasn't expecting a wagon.
Yeah, like a little red, like radio flyer kind of red wagon that you had as a kid. He went in and he retrieved Elena's body. He brought the body back to his home, where he then began to preserve the body as best he could. He cut her open and filled her torso with rags to keep her form. He took piano wire and fastened it through her joints and bones to keep her limbs from falling off. He wrapped her form in scented linens, wax, and plaster of Paris. He replaced her eyes with glass beads that obviously looked similar to eyes. And the finishing touch? Well, a wig he had made from locks of Elena's actual hair that he had gotten from her mother. He did everything he could to make her appear alive. He dressed her and perfumed her. He took every step he could to halt her decomposition and preserve his body.
Wait a second. I'm assuming she died with hair. Tuberculosis doesn't typically make your hair fall out. So why did she... Okay, so did they shave her head? Why did her mother have her hair? I don't understand what's going on here.
That's not the part. That's weird, babe. Shave... her being bald is not the weird part of that.
It is weird, though. You have to admit. It's one little tiny part of weird in this big, weird
cake. He'd been blasting
her
with radiation and stuff. Her hair might have fallen off.
Yeah, but it doesn't fall out. Okay, whatever. Let's just...
I don't know what medicines he gave her. I know that he took her corpse.
Well, we'll just keep going.
Strung it together with piano wire.
All right, so she's got a wig. Gotcha. Go ahead. Doesn't matter.
The wig isn't the weird part.
Let's keep going.
Continuing with the story. If you thought the wig part was weird.
Mm-hmm.
Now, sources differ on this exact detail as to what got Elena's sister involved. But in October of 1940, after supposedly hearing that a local boy had peeked through Tansler's parlor window and saw Tansler and Elena dancing together, Elena's sister went to Tansler and confronted him. Needless to say, the authorities came to search the home and found the body of Elena. Some reports say that he had kept her in or had a workshop that was in the fuselage of a broken down airplane. I don't know if we know that he liked airplanes or whatever, because he built that in
eccentric man.
He's a little eccentric, yeah. But regardless, they found the body. They detained Tanzler and had him arrested and psychiatrically evaluated. He was found competent to stand trial for the wanton and malicious destruction of a grave and removing a body without authorization. The charges were dropped. Tanzler was released, and the public seemed to sympathize with Tanzler as some sort of eccentric romantic.
Clearly did not see Elena's corpse.
Well, actually, they did. The body was put on display, and thousands of visitors, like 6,000 people, came to see it. Eventually, it was returned to Key West Cemetery and buried in an unmarked grave to prevent tempering. Oh, yeah, you can see her body. There's pictures of.
I've seen pictures, I think, of this.
Yeah, so.
She's like waxy looking.
Well, he eventually made like a death mask of her. Go back to our
Maybe
first
that's
episode.
What I've seen. Yeah.
But yeah, he had made that. Which comes into play pretty quickly too here. In 1944, Tanzler had moved closer to his family in Zephyr Hills, Florida. His wife, Doris, who was still his wife throughout this, I guess, but I'm fairly certain that they were separated since the 1930s, but he had moved back up closer to the rest of his family. And they helped support him in his later years. Being separated from Elena was not easy for Tanzler. So strong was his obsession that he had created a life-sized effigy, which is like a doll of her.
Yeah, wow.
I guess more appropriately of Elena. He had used a death mask, and he sculpted her a new face and, built as close to her initial body as he could, an effigy of her. At the age of 75, Carl Tanzler died in his home. His body was found 3 weeks after the time of death. Some reports say that he was collapsed behind a piano. Some, and obviously this one is the better one, some reports have him laying on his floor in the middle of a room wrapped in the arms of Elena. Rumors in tabloids state that Tanzler had found the gravesite and swapped the body and the effigy so that it was actually the real Elena that was found in his home at the time of his death.
So was it?
Rumors in tabloids.
Okay. I'm assuming then that it's not true and they didn't do any tests on it and it was just definitely a doll.
Well, I mean, you got to think. This is a 20-year-old corpse at this point, too. Like,
yeah.
It would be more doll than person at this point anyways. I mean, I guess they could have, but I don't think that they ever did. I don't think that there was ever a question on that. But it could have been, and I prefer to think that it was. I mean, he does seem like the type of guy who would have just poked holes in the ground with like a
one of those mole spuds.
Mole spuds, yeah. Digging around, seeing he could find her location. Further rumors and speculations and possibly just people trying to make it seem like it's more sinister than it may have actually been, such as on HBO's Autopsy. Which is a TV show.
I've seen it.
Yeah. This is where I first heard of the whole story. They claimed that upon later autopsy of Elena, not the doll version, but the actual Elena, they revealed that Tanzler had inserted a cylinder into her abdomen to allow for intercourse. But that doesn't seem to be from any like notable sources, any credible sources I'm sure HBO does their mm-hmm. their homework when they put something on like that, but who knows. Also, I had seen reports that didn't come out until years after everything, and like nobody who had actually claimed that had happened was actually somebody who actually participated in the autopsy. So let's give Carl von Kossel Tanzler a break and assume that it was
just a rumor.
Yeah, that he didn't actually do something like that. He may have, but who knows. If we are only so lucky to be loved so deeply, am I right? But I don't know how I'd feel about about having my body taken like that. I mean, I don't really feel much of an attachment to a body after death. You know what I mean? Like, I feel it's mostly just a vehicle for who I really am. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Not necessarily even getting into like that soul and going to heaven or hell or whatever, anything like that. I feel like we're more than just the meat, you know? So.
Yeah. I mean, I know people feel differently, but I've been in a room with a dead body. And once that person died, it was like, they're gone. So I'm just going to go because they're gone.
You can almost feel it.
Yeah. You can tell it's just empty now.
Yeah. You can kind of feel that. I mean, yes, no, I guess. I mean, the situations that we have in that regards, I mean, there's definitely, this is more towards the listeners I know that you have, but I mean, if you've ever like walked into a room and, or into a funeral hall and you see somebody in the casket, like sometimes it really is like, oh, that they're sleeping, you know,
they
have a tendency to look that way. But if you're there at the time of death, it does feel like there's a sudden vacuum suddenly in that room for sure.
I mean, I won't get too deep into it on this one, but like for this particular instance, when it happened to me, I mean, I was trying to feel like a moment and I didn't, but it was once I stopped paying conscious attention to it, it was like, okay, well, they're there now. But then later when they were gone, it was like, okay, well, I don't feel the need to stay here with this body anymore because this is not the person.
Sure. You know?
Sure. I mean, some people feel differently, but.
Yeah. I'm sure a lot of people do. I mean, I don't know. I guess it's having some kind of physical reminder of the person, you know, whether it's a gravesite, ashes, an effigy, the actual corpse strung together with piano wire. I mean, some people deal with it differently, but I'm just not really that person to really connect it to a body like that, I feel like.
I mean, it's nice, but I'm the same way. You know, I have a necklace with ashes in it, but I like it and I carry it with me, but at the same time, I'm like, it doesn't make me feel any particular connection, you know?
Yeah, I have my mom's ashes and stuff too. And I mean, I think of it more like, I don't know. It's Macabrepedia, so I guess I can say this.
You guys
is the
know
audience.
What you're in for here.
Yeah, this is the people that I can say this stuff to. You stop tuning in if you don't like macabre stuff. But I think it's cool to have my mom's ashes, but mostly because they're cremated ashes. You know what I mean? Like if it was anybody's ashes, not even like somebody particularly close to me, but if I just had a pile of somebody's ashes, I'd be like, oh, that's cool. I have somebody's ashes. The fact that it's my mom, it's not my mom. You know what I mean? Like,
and no, I feel the same way. I mean, it's kind of cool to have, and I do have some type of respect for it, but I don't have like an emotional need to be around it, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I know some people feel differently, but that's just how I feel about it.
I always assume that I'm the emotional minority when it comes to death and stuff like that.
Oh, I definitely am. I've learned that.
Yeah. But I, originally with, in regards to my mom's remains, this podcast has slightly gone off to more,
a little off topic
about, it's about remains and, you know, letting go. That was the subject.
We'll have a whole episode on this.
Yeah. But I had originally had my mom's ashes because one, she had cancer and was very concerned with the cancer outliving her in a way, you know, like continuing to survive on her remains and weirdness like that. But I was originally going to take her ashes and then put it into a tattoo. But then I kind of remembered that pretty sure my mom hates tattoos. So I was like, maybe not. I still think she probably would have thought it was cool, but you know, you never know. My mom, she changed her opinion sometimes very strongly without letting me know about how she felt about things like that. But anyways, that's going to do it for today's entry into Macabrepedia. This one and the next one are going to be a little bit shorter than they normally are. A lot of time constraints in regards to this.
We'll talk about that maybe a little bit once, you know, things get back to normal.
Yeah. There was a couple of time restrictions that we had this week. But other than that, that's about it. We appreciate you coming and joining us. And of course, as always, reach out to us on social media. You can reach us on Facebook and Twitter at Macabrepedia.
And we're also on Instagram, of course, Macabrepedia Pod. We're mostly active on Twitter, though, right now, to be honest. But we also have
which
an email.
Which is still somewhat limited. I'm not
really
jumping on
that. It's very limited, but we...
You know, it's really putting that a little bit on you guys. Reach out to me. You want to start a conversation? I ain't trying to blow you up by letting you know that the podcast is out. Like, you know, I'll throw it out there. Like, share, you know, whatever. Try to get some traction. I mean, I appreciate you guys, you know, listening. And we can't spread the word without a little help from you. So, you know, if you know anybody who wants to hear about me tattooing myself with my mom's ashes, do it. I might still do it.
Or our disconnect from our mother's earthly remains.
Yeah. Or, you know, whatever. You know your friends. They ain't going to judge you. Let them judge us.
Yeah. That's why we did a podcast.
But anyways, yes, Gmail.
Yeah, we're macabrepediapod@gmail.com. All in the show notes.
And we have a YouTube channel. Not a lot of views on any of those. I mean, most of our audience is here on podcast form. But if you want to go to Macabrepedia Pod, I think, for YouTube, there's also a Macabrepedia.
That's us too.
No.
Yes.
No.
There's a
Magda's
Macabrepedia.
Yeah, there's Magda's. That's what I was trying to get to. Shut up. The Magda's Macabrepedia, which... we didn't steal the name, but when we put it in and we found that it was already there, we were kind of like, oh, man. But then we were kind of like, yo, did she ever make that movie she's talking about? Because I want to see that. Yo, Magda, if you're one of our listeners, hit us up.
We're going to be sending people over there.
So
probably what? Already are, actually.
She's got one video, and it's a good idea. I mean, not the name. And we're not.
No,
I came
up with the name on my own, and then I went and I searched and found it. But, yeah, you know. Everybody has the same good ideas, I suppose.
Yeah, but if you know Magda, send her this, because I mean, this is probably the kind of stuff that she and her friends are into if they are going to make a movie about stuff like this.
Absolutely.
But anyways, reach out, say hi. We like that. And as always, thank you, and join us next week as we add another entry into this hour, Macabrepedia. Normally there's a whisper, but now there's not, so that's good.
It was intentional.